afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news information. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of the syndicated American Warrior radio show heard Saturdays at noon here on KVOI. I'm sitting in for Bill in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Bill is exploring the Caribbean, or Caribbean, I guess, depending on where you're from. You can follow his adventures on Facebook. Let's see if he finds any pirate gold while he's down there. Today, we're going to be discussing a variety of topics important to our community: water, roads, developments at Davis-Monthan and Air Force Base, and, of course, the upcoming city elections. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. Joining me today in the studio is Ted Maxwell, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Ted is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy and had a long career of service to our nation, retiring at the rank of Major General. He also sits on the Arizona Transportation Board. Ted, welcome back, I guess, to the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Ben. Always good to be here, and it's good to be on with you.
In the 2 years I've been guest hosting for Bill, I've never been able to get you on the show, so I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket after this today.
Well, come on. You invited me once to American Warrior Radio, and I never got the opportunity to go back.
Ouch. Okay. I've got friends with that program. I'll check in with them.
All right, yeah, make that happen.
Ted, if anyone's been in the West for any length of time, they've probably heard the phrase, whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting. That is basically the essence of us being able to live here in the Sonoran Desert. We had, I think, fortunately, apparently one of the wettest winters in recent history, and the snowpack is really good, so it's helped. But we're not out of the woods yet by any stretch of the imagination.
No, there's a couple variables on the water that makes it so interesting. We've heard a lot about the Colorado River. Everybody knows. I mean, if you've spent any time up at Lake Mead or at Lake Powell, the lines of where the water used to be are significantly higher than where they are now. And both of them, honestly, are at the point where they're not there yet, where we need to be fearful, but they've got the potential, unless the rain flow and the snowpack, more specifically, changes, to approach Deadpool on those. One in Lake Powell, it's when they can't produce any more electricity because there are multiple municipalities that use that electricity. And the other ones where the level at Lake Mead will be just so low, you just can't remove any more water from the lake. So those have been a factor, and everybody's heard a lot about the Colorado River and the CAP specifically, and how many millions of acre feet may or may not come down, and the impact it's going to have on everything from agriculture to municipalities to access to water. But it's important to remember that, one, Arizona's always been brilliant at managing their water over the decades and years. I mean, that's how we got the CAP. There's a lot of things there. So I think there's a lot of good people still working on it. But the other thing is the CAP water, or the Colorado River, only provides 36%. That's a loose only. That's a lot of the percentage of the water. But it's only 36% of the water that we use in the state of Arizona. And a larger portion of that comes from groundwater. Mm-hmm. And in our groundwater managements, and, you know, between managing the Colorado River and the groundwater, there's a lot of challenges. But to your point, 161% of normal average is the snowpack this year in the Rockies. They believe 151% will be the amount of water that will flow down. And you always lose during the flow from the Rockies into Powell. And more importantly, the Bureau of Reclamation just announced that they're going to release the 9.5, which is the million acre feet, which is the maximum amount they can release out of Powell, not what we were expecting, which was going to be 7 million acre feet. So that's gotten some more water coming down the river this year, and that changes a lot of things, particularly the negotiations.
Yeah, that's the politics. Well, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. And I think that's something else. You know, a lot of people maybe don't understand or heard this Deadpool phrase, but you're right. It's not just that we're then short on water, but at some point, basically, they have to stop the generators.
Correct.
So they're not producing electricity either, which is this time of year, you know, particularly for California with the brownouts and all these things. That's going to impact everybody right in their living room.
Absolutely. And that was why the announcement by the Bureau, they basically put two bookends out as possible solutions. One was pretty much very favorable to the California aspect, using the old laws of the river on how you split that one. The other one's what was along the lines of the six-state solution, which California was the only one that didn't come to agreement on. They said, hey, these are the two things we're considering. what I think they're really doing is they're telling you, the seven states better negotiate. And the reason I say that 9.5 million acre feet coming off Powell provided some opportunity there is now potentially the seven states could go back and go to the Bureau of Reclamation and say, don't make the cuts as big as you were planning. We know that this is only 1 year, but I think we can deal with smaller cuts now, and that may bring California and Arizona to the table. California and Arizona are the two states that really get impacted the most.
I tell you, this is, I don't know if this is before your time, you're probably off flying somewhere, but back, I don't know if it was Volge or Mayor Walker, but we did a really good job of pushing to, you know, basically re-put the water back into the groundwater, regenerate the groundwater. And Tucson, I would say nationally, is one of the leaders in conservation. And so this is a job for all of us. And I mean, I harvest rainwater at my home. I do the gray water stuff in the backyard. But there are some, again, people might, you know, you see their eyes roll back in the head when we talk about CAP and some of this stuff, but there's some things coming down the line. I know locally, the city of Tucson is doing three development code amendments, which would prohibit ornamental grass.
Ornamental grass.
Require separate metering of landscaping versus potable water. What's the other one? I'm missing one.
I'm not sure. It may be, I doubt it's rainwater capture, but it could be. It may be along those lines. They've talked about changing that in the codes. But to your point is, it is an issue that affects all of us. Do you remember it?
Yeah, it's water, requiring water sense fixtures and all new construction. And I know the county is looking at upgrading their landscape ordinances. And this is kind of an interesting move. One of the small things they're doing now is they're not requiring as many shade trees on a development where, you know, you had put an X number of trees. Now it's going to be half of that because not because we don't need more shade, but because we're kind of short on water. But there are some very serious considerations in the drought plans. I think up in Marana, if they hit a tier three drought, they're just going to stop issuing building permits.
Yeah, and that is the biggest hit. Avoiding the tier three is really the critical thing that all the folks that are involved in this, and I'm on the reconciliation advisory council for the state, and so that's where we get a lot of this information. But there's only a handful of Southern Arizonans on that group, and we have done a great job down here, and some of it was by surprise. We've got all the ability to put the water into the ground because of the concern when the CAP first came down here, that the first time they turned it on, it flowed brown, and people are going, well, we're never going to put that. So there was a lot of movement to never send the CAP water to the taps. So we had to build these facilities, which would allow us to put the water back into the ground, and now we've got massive facilities of where we can actually put water we either capture or, in this case, turn it away from the CAP back into the ground while we use other sources to include some groundwater. And it gives us, our water tables have been pretty consistent. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of concerns with the impact of PFAS, but the city's been on top of not allowing any of those chemicals to get into our groundwater. And I mean, sometimes people forget the water under the ground is giant lakes and rivers. The water's moving around a lot, and that's where you get into the argument, you know, is a water your ground, your property owner, right? If you can drill to it, is it yours, or is it moving around amongst the ground?
Well, and we're at the end of the line of CAP.
Absolutely.
We're the last stop, but we're the last person at the trough. So what are your thoughts on, you know, when I talk about, we've got an affordable housing crisis here in Tucson, and the only real long-term answer, Ted, is we need to build more inventory.
Oh, absolutely.
When it comes to water with our in-migration, for example, what are your thoughts on the desalinization plant down in Mexico? I mean, eventually are we as a state going to have to start looking at something a little more aggressive like that?
One of the solutions is absolutely finding new sources of water. There was actually some funding in the budget that was passed yesterday to start exploring desalinization. But desalinization of the brackish water that resides in Buckeye. If you pull water out of the ground over in the area of Buckeye just west of Phoenix, it is highly salinated to the point where you just can't turn it and put it into the system. So you'd have to desal that. So they're doing some studies on seeing if that's viable. The thing that will drive desalinization, Ben, in my opinion, is the price of water. Now, an acre foot of water is 335,000 gallons. Right now, the going rate for a acre foot of water is $400.
Okay.
So when you do the math, you go, you're not paying anything for 335 gallons. You're only paying $400. It's somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 to run a desal plant. So the price isn't there yet, but it's going to get there.
And I might be wrong on this. I don't do math in public, Ted, but I think I'd read somewhere that 1 acre foot of water is enough to supply 2 average households.
Correct.
For a year.
Yes.
So then you take those numbers you cited and then divide it by 2. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, when we come back, we've dealt with water. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about asphalt.
you might want to talk asphalt. I want to talk roads. So
it's the same thing.
I know it is.
Well, and not in some parts of town, I suppose.
That is true. Not all roads have significant enough asphalt on them. That's for sure. And the prices of asphalt, to your point, have been going up.
Oh boy, here we go again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. I'm joined by Ted Maxwell. If you'd like to chat with us, give us a call, 790-2040. Again, coming up, we do water conservation really well. I'd propose we don't do so well on roads. Stick around.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is a guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia, sitting in for Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. You can find them on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Of course, you can treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including their famous Danish Kringles. You can look them up, monasdanishbakery.com, or check out thebuckmastershow.com for a link directly to Mona's Danish Bakery. I'm joined by Ted Maxwell. He's the president and CEO of Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We're talking about all things, not all things Tucson, but things that Tucsonans should be aware of. You know, the old Pueblo tends to get a little sleepy during the summer, but there's a lot of stuff popping out there, and people need to be paying attention. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line. That number is 790-2040, sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ted, I've owned my home, and I'm just north of the U of A. I've owned it since 1994. And in the last, what, 6 or 7 months or so, they actually came in and redid the streets. Not just patching potholes, but actually tearing it up, putting down all new asphalt, and it's just smooth. I mean, it's beautiful. But it's only in a, I don't know, maybe 8-square-block area. And I usually use Mountain Avenue to go north. And Mountain used to be one of the smoothest streets in Tucson, right? It was a beautiful boulevard. And now, holy smokes, I mean, my poor suspension on my car. So we're making progress, but we've never been very good at road repair, at least locally, in my opinion.
And there are challenges with it now. I'd be curious to know if yours was done under the Prop 101, which is the one that just expired and is now being replaced by Prop 411. I know you're involved in some of those committees, Complete Streets and others, that are telling where those dollars are going. But, you know, we've got the problem statewide. I sit on the State Transportation Board, and with all of our highways, we can only touch every street about 20 years, and that's not sufficient to keep roads in good shape. So 411, I think, is going to help with the neighborhood roads. The question is going to be, how are we going to improve and continue to keep our arterial roads and some of our connectors, you know, the ones that connect you between arterials, that and the arterials being more regional in nature.
And just so as people understand, Prop 411 was the extension of the half-cent sales tax.
Correct.
That passed last year in 2022. And the improvements in my neighborhood happened after that passed, so I suspected. Well, and I also have a former city council member who lives around the corner. So
you're not supposed to say those things, Ben. You're not supposed to say those things.
Explain it, Ted, because you sit on the board. So for your average person, we don't pay attention to this, but the sources of money that go to a municipality to pay for road repairs. Or it could be things like Prop 11 where we're taxing ourselves to do that.
Correct.
There's money that comes out of the gas tax, as I understand it.
Correct. Both out of the gas tax and the VLT. There's a whole series of funding there that goes into what's HERF, the Highway User Revenue Funds. And some of those funds trickle down to both incorporated municipalities and to counties, you know, for their unincorporated area, but at a lower rate. There's always been discussion about that. I know Vail's contemplating incorporation, and those outside of Vail are in the infrastructure business are saying, yes, we need to do that because we get more money than that's going to come through shared state revenue. So the municipalities get money from there as well. There is some RTA and PAG dollars that will also come into those municipalities. And remember, most of there's federal funds that flow down and also get distributed. Right. So you've got a whole bunch of different pockets. Some of those buckets, though, come with limitations. And that's why you see folks go out and they're in within their municipalities with specific dollars for specific efforts. We kind of like the RTA money because it is actually some of the most flexible money because the board can make a decision to try to move it around, especially if it's not in one of the named projects that's on the RTA. Obviously, the named projects we want to complete. The challenge has been, even with federal dollars, everybody goes, IJ came out, a lot of money. And it was a good move. 40% of the funding in there is going to new projects. And when I say new projects, I should say new programs. It's not coming into the traditional system that works its way down to the municipalities.
Is it safe to say that here in Southern Arizona, we're a donor county, and that we're not getting back as much as we're putting in because of the incorporation? Because I mean, like Maricopa County is something like 93% incorporated.
When it comes to the shared state revenue, I'd say absolutely. And there used to be, and there still is, a lot of arguments how much it would really be. But I'm telling you, even those who say it's not going to be as much as other people are saying will admit that it's still a big number. You know, Chuck Huckleberry used to talk about it all the time. Oh, no, it's only going to be about $50 million instead of 100. Some people were claiming $108 million. Well, that's $50 million, and that's a significant chunk. So by having more unincorporated Pima County, there's absolutely no doubt we are losing out on our what I'd call fair share as a region of the shared state revenues. And that means both the money that comes down for infrastructure and road and money that comes down to the cities and municipalities for other purposes. So Maricopa is 97% incorporated, and that's 4.5 million people that are 97% incorporated. And that's where a lot of the state tax revenue goes.
You know what I'm kind of waiting for is some more serious discussions about electric vehicles. There's a push to get, and in Tucson right now, only about 1% of the metro population drives an electric vehicle. But those folks aren't paying the gas tax. And that asphalt doesn't care whether I'm driving a diesel truck or a Tesla. as far as breaking down the asphalt. So I've heard, or I would guess somewhere down the line, there's going to be a conversation about, okay, we need the electric vehicle folks to pay their fair share too.
So they've just changed the electrical vehicle folks when it comes to VLT. Because before, okay, because of the trying to encourage more purchase, they were paying, I think, $25 a year. Now they're paying based on the value of the car. So that's been corrected. However, four wheels is four wheels on the road, like you mentioned, and eight wheels for, and more for some of the, and right now we do it purely through user taxes. And because there's no gas, no diesel that's going into any of the electric vehicles, they're not paying for that wear and tear that they're doing. I've said a lot of times recently, Ben, is we don't need to talk about raising the gas tax. We don't need to talk about adding another tax, because every time we talk in infrastructure, people go, oh, you're talking taxes. No, what I'm saying is we need to modernize how we fund our infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We have to come up with a system that those who use it do pay more than those who don't. So it is, but it's got to be modernization. That means taking a look at it. And there's good, some people are saying they like the tires, and the more importantly, the weight.
Sure.
The weight that you're putting on the tire chews up the asphalt more. But we've got to have, we haven't even started those discussions. Our gas tax hasn't changed since 1991. So it's definitely
because,
not keeping up with inflation.
You're a smarter guy than I, clearly, in addition to be taller and handsome and all that stuff. But because of all the batteries, on average, based on the length of the vehicle, is an electric vehicle weigh more than?
I believe it does. Okay. I should know that answer. Now you've given me another question, but I believe it does, because a lot of those, especially some of the higher end electric vehicles. I mean, the Lucid Air, a state transportation board, we toured that at one point, and we got the opportunity to ride in the back seat. It's a phenomenal vehicle. The entire underbelly is a battery. And they said they expect them to last about 100,000 miles. I said, well, then what? They said, well.
Yeah. I said, yeah. You're
probably looking at a new car, because right now the to put the new batteries on costs as much as a new car.
Yeah. I tell you what, Ingrid called us on the Bill Buckmaster live line. Ingrid, what's your question or comment for General Maxwell?
I don't know if you took it up while I was speaking to the screener, but shouldn't we be taxing battery-operated cars for the roads by their weight and by the number of miles they've driven, not the value of the car? Why it, the person's wealth?
And Ingrid, you're correct on that one. The VLT, there's two different things. There's the road and the gas and the user tax that there's paid, and then there's the vehicle license tax. And it's the license tax, which part of it goes towards multiple different funding multiple different programs to include some of the roads. That's the one that's based on the value of the car. So if you're driving a 2000, and like my son, a 2006 Toyota Corolla, it's in theory going to be much less than somebody driving a brand new vehicle. But to your point about how we should pay the rest of it, there are a couple states that are looking at doing mileage. In Europe, not that I turn to Europe as the perfect way to consider things, but they do a lot of it by weight. When I was in the Air Force and lived in Belgium, I paid by the weight of my car, because it's the weight and the tires that do and the miles driven, to your point, that do the damage. But right now there's no real conversation about how we should modernize how we create these funds.
And just to clarify, Ted, the VLT is what most of us normally call the registration, right?
That's what we renew every year, every 2 years. Yes,
okay.
It's the registration.
So that's coming in every year, every couple of years,
right.
But that is based on value.
And that funding was the funding that during some of the lean years in 2008 got swept away by the legislature and used elsewhere and never was put into the road. So again, roads are high on everybody's importance when you get damage from a pothole or something like that. But other than that, roads and maintenance fall farther down on people's wish list. It needs to be higher up there.
Ingrid, I hope that answered your question.
Well, am I still on the air?
Yes, you are.
The roads, there isn't a lot of conscientiousness in road repair on the part of some people. They're very lackadaisical, and they think it's a big joke. I've had personal experience. And we need better supervision, monitoring of the process. the whole ball of wax. It's not monitored, and it should be. Thank you very much.
Bye. Ingrid, thanks for listening to the Buckmaster Show and joining us. We've got a line open, folks, if you want to give us a call. 790-2040 is the Buckmaster Live line. We don't have quite enough time before the break, but when we come back, Ted, I want to talk about RTA because from my perspective in my day job working with municipalities, I think it's a great example of metro cooperation, and it's something that we should be very proud of, and I'd love to see more of it happen. Not necessarily the Las Vegas model where they're pretty much Las Vegas and Clark County are one and the same, but I'm a big fan of RTA, and we've got a vote coming up to renew that, and I'd like to chat with you more about that. Anything else? Now, I'm going to put you in a tough spot here, but you can handle it because you're a general. The complete streets, what we're doing, the goal of that is to make streets safe and usable for everyone. Cars, trucks, bicycles, pedestrians, skateboards, whatever it is. At some point, though, do we talk about a bicycle license tax? Now, I know a 10-speed's not breaking down the asphalt.
So I would say no on that idea, but what I would propose the discussions need to be focused on is, should every street be usable for everybody? Or if we were to dedicate streets for crosstown traffic, for local vehicles, for bikes, yeah, would that be a more efficient use of our dollars?
I've got some pretty strong opinions on that. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia, guest hosting for Bill Buckmaster. We'll be back after this short break. Pay for the show. Don't forget, you can interact with us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Live Line. That number is 790-2040. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about asphalt and roads and then what's happening out at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Stick around.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Bunkmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is our guest host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. You can tell I'm a guest host because I missed the cue, but thanks, Tom, for keeping me on track. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I put in my garden in the backyard, and it was a weird season this year, Bill, so I put in my garden, and I thought we were good to go, and then like 2 days later, there's another hard freeze, so yeah. They didn't quite make it. So I'm going to make a trip over to Green Things. They've provided my gardening needs since 1970. They sit on a lovely 13-acre site. It's also home to Zocalo Village if you want some fine Mexican and Latin imported furniture and art. Green Things is on River Road just west of Brandy Fenton Park and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Also, you can look up zocalovillage.com. Don't forget you can call us on the Buckmaster Live Line. That number is 790-2040, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And boy, right off the bat, we've got a caller. Pretty good stuff. People, they didn't want to talk about water, but they sure as heck want to talk about potholes.
Yep,
Jeff, you called the Buckmaster Show. What is your question or comment for us there, Jeff?
Well, I hope this is a simple engineering question, and it pertains to the freeway in the area of downtown, stretching as far north, I suppose, as Ina and east to Craycross, somewhere out there. It looks like the undersurface of the road is concrete. The freeway was made out of concrete in the area of, the urban area downtown, which makes sense. What doesn't make sense is somebody has poured asphalt, and it's not very thick asphalt, an inch or two, over the concrete. Well, surprise, surprise. Guess what's happening to all that asphalt? And anybody that's been down that freeway between, I'll just say Prince and Alvernon, knows what I'm talking about. That thing just beats you to death going down there. And I'm just curious, if you could tell me why they did that.
Well, I don't have a for sure answer. My guess is going to be because of funding. They look at it, and there's, as I mentioned, in the state transportation board is responsible for the highway system throughout the state, both federal, state, non-highway system roads as well, that fall under our purview. And as of right now, with zero money starting in 2027, zero money for any expansion, we've got enough funds programmed and forecast to be able to touch every road 20 years. Well, they're not going to last 20 years. So there's going to be some temporary fixes that are going to occur at some time in there. That's why I do think it's serious. We need to get serious sometimes about the funding mechanisms and sources and how we're going to do this. But that would be my guess, Jeff, to be honest with you. I mean, I can go back and look into it because I know the section of road you're talking about. But sometimes you see the quick repairs versus the long-term fixes. And that right now, if you start looking at the number of roads we've got on our state highway system that are, if you're on the non-state highway system, it's over 33% of them are poor to failing. And at that point, now you're doing a complete rebuild, which is more expensive. It extends the life, but it doesn't extend it 20 plus years. So we've got to get some of those things set up. And that would be my guess on Interstate 10.
Jeff, we'll try and get a hold of a transportation engineer and maybe get an answer to you. But thanks for calling the Buckmaster Show. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah, I would. The thing I wonder about, Jeff, is I know there's a big part of when you are laying asphalt, another topical fixes, it has to do with the sealant, you know, and how well it stands up. And it doesn't sound like it's standing up very well.
You know, I spent a year in South Dakota, and a lot of the roads out there, particularly the roads between the communities, not the municipalities, are just concrete.
Right.
And you get this, I was a kid, so I would always fall asleep because you get this constant thump, 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 thump on the seams because they have to handle the expansion, the contraction because of the weather. And it's like being on a railroad to being on a train and put me to sleep. Let's talk about RTA. I mentioned before the break that I'm just a huge fan. It's a great example of how collaboration should and can work. And I just looked at their website. I want to say since 2006, they've completed nearly 930 projects. That's huge.
Absolutely.
But it's coming up. It's about to expire pretty soon. And so there's RTA Next will be the renewal of that. And I'll just go on the record right now. I encourage everybody out there to support it and vote for it. There's still a lot left to be done.
And it's going to be a long campaign for that. We're still in the process. You know, you mentioned Tucson becomes a sleepy town over the summer, mm-hmm. and it does. We kind of joke for some of these organizations. We could hold meetings in, you know, at the beach in California somewhere, or somewhere
San
not
San Diego.
So, yeah, San Diego's got a lot of Arizonans out there, but the we're hoping that the Citizens Advisory Committee and the Technical Management Committee, who are the two organizations that are community-driven, the technical management more on the experts, and each municipality is represented, and all the municipalities are represented on the Citizens Advisory Committee, but they're the ones that are saying what our communities want going forward. We're hoping by the end of the summer they'll have a plan to forward to the board, because ultimately the board is the one that will review it and make changes and put it forward. The challenge is the current ask of them is to build a plan based on the continuation of the half-cent sales tax. And so there's limited funds and there's competing interests. Sure. And so they're out there right now. There's, you know, if you look at the project list, I think it's currently sitting at about 37 projects that are on it, including four that did not get completed during RTA 1. And that takes up about 58% of the dollars. So it is a puzzle when they're building that. But Jeff's question leads into my point of why it's so important. One is it's a great example of regional collaboration mm-hmm. when possible. Two, there are no funds for expansion of our roads, and that means adding lanes or adding bike miles or anything.
Or interchanges.
Interchanges. Yeah. There's no funds available to do that other than just keeping our roads in the shape we can get. And so without regional dollars, if it's only going to be municipality dollars created and only going to be state and federal dollars, we won't be able to expand any roads. And whether people want to hear it or not, Bill, I transplanted to Tucson in 99. There are way more people that are going to be coming this way because what keeps us here in this community is how much we love and enjoy it. Well, when people come and visit, they realize how good it is too, especially when it's snowing and frozen over in other parts of the country.
I tell you, part of my idea, or I think the reason the original RTA was so successful, is that as the voter, I'm looking at the ballot and they're listing specifically, here's what we're going to spend your money on, Project A, Project B, and that's, it wasn't this sort of amorphous feel good, no. You know, we're going to pave your streets, maybe, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So the RTA next, I assume, you know, do you know, is that going to be the same way?
It is. Right now there are, like I said, 41 projects. So those projects list will be listed in the pamphlet. You will know what the projects are. And that takes up roughly 60%, just under 60%. And then the other 40% of available funds get divided into buckets that support issues like transit, safety. And that's where you get some of the safety bus pullouts, or they're looking at putting one in for technology. So as we get new technology on signals or lights that makes our flow of goods and services and people throughout our region, it's a regional transportation authority, that might sit in those buckets. So that's kind of where the municipalities can come in afterwards and go, hey, here's an idea for a project. And the RTA board reviews the project and authorizes it. But the key is the hardcore road projects and changes that they want are outlined very specifically, and those are the ones we do. Now, sometimes they'll get modified a little bit. Some of them have actually gotten expanded because the municipalities come in and said, I want to put more. And some of them, like First Avenue, has actually been reduced on the number of lanes they're going to have because the traffic that was forecast 20 years ago just isn't there right now.
Bingo.
So it made sense.
So, for example, First Avenue, I think, is one of those projects. I tell you, if all else being equal, and I know we don't have enough money to do this, but early on in the RTA process, I know the city engineers were talking about Grant and Campbell and maybe putting one, I can't remember if it was the east-west flow under the north-south, whatever it is, but I mean, I thought that was a great idea, but of course, that's pretty pricey. And we were just talking about Diana Alcorn, the former director of transportation, off the air during the break, and I know that was one of her main things when she first was appointed, was the technology piece. Right up, without spending a lot of money, if we start synchronize our signals, we could really improve the efficiency of the flow. And that doesn't take a lot of money.
No, it doesn't. But it remains a challenge because we've put a lot of things in there for safety as well. There's hawk intersections all over the region. Well, the hawk intersection, unless it's linked properly with the technology, is going to interrupt that flow. And, you know, when you talk about efficiencies and getting, you know, like you said during the break, you know, cars idling at intersections is not doing anybody any good, you know, from a perspective. So there's a lot that goes into it, but the intent is that the voters will know specifically the projects, and it's pretty important. The Pinal County just rejected one, which they're going to go back for and trying to get, because not enough of the voters could connect with, I see what helps me by voting for this.
Right. Ted, we've got to take a short break. Roy and Leonard, you call the Bill Buckmaster live line. Hold on through the break. We'll get to back to you when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia, guest hosting for Bill from the Green Things Socolo Village Studios. Boy, I tell you, Ted Maxwell is my guest here. He's the president and CEO of the Southerners and Leadership Council. You're right, Ted. We talk asphalt and potholes, and boy, that lights up the lines. We've got two callers holding. Let's start with you, Roy. Roy, you've got a comment for us.
Actually, two quick comments and a question. One of the comments is there was a study where it's still being done in a barge or a boat off the California coast where they're doing desalinization off of the boat, and the byproducts are water, pure water, calcium carbonate, and hydrogen. And the plan is to sell the hydrogen in order to pay for the desalinization itself. So that's something that I wish the U of A and Tucson would cooperate in and possibly create, some new technologies or new possibilities at the very least. That's my first comment. My second comment is, why is it that roads are built, nice, beautiful roads, and within a couple of months, repairs or utilities come in and tear them up? Isn't there any coordination between what the planners for the roads have and the planners for everybody else has? And then lastly, is the road work done based on political power? It just seems that there's areas of Tucson, such as the west of the downtown area, that are kind of like starving for funds and like and some of the residents feel like we've lived here for 50, 60 years, paid our taxes for 50, 60 years, and yet we see our tax money going elsewhere.
Roy, thanks for calling. All good observations. I like that, you know, doing it on a boat, that's probably better for the environment too, I'm guessing, Ted, doing
I'll tell you, the biggest thing on the water side of Roy's comment is we have to find other sources. And innovation and technology mm-hmm. is going to be a leading effort there. So I too would like to see more universities focus on. The challenge is, in the U.S., do we have a water shortage? Not in the U.S. Do we have a water shortage in the South and in to the Southwest specifically? Absolutely. But we know we have populations that are going to be here. And so we do need more long-term studies done. And right to your question about, yes, there's coordination. Yes, it's all laid out there. And I'm going to be a little cynical here myself. It's bureaucracy at work.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for tearing up a brand new road to lay a power line when you just had torn up the road. So hopefully we'll see some improvement on that part. And watch the 411 funds. The 411 funds are the ones that were said every community would have their roads touched. So there's, you know, citizens groups and organizations out there that help them decide what roads are next, and use your voice.
Roy, thanks for listening to the Buckmaster Show. Tom, let's go to Leonard. Leonard, what is your question or comment?
Yeah, I'd like to comment about you're saying that there are no other funds other than the half-cent sales tax on the RTA. Where's some money going that comes from the gas tax? And are they ever going to put that interchange in across from Rita Ranch over to I-19 that they talked about 10 years ago? I'll listen to your answers off the phone on the radio.
So Leonard, great question. So the first one, when I say there's nothing other than the half cent, I said that's available and dedicated towards infrastructure expansion. The funds that come down from the state to the municipalities, to the county, and both to the municipalities, are used predominantly, not wholly, in some of the municipalities they use some of it for expansion, or they go out to another tax, are used predominantly for the maintenance of the roads and trying to keep the uptake on that. The final thing you alluded to is something called the Sonoran Corridor. And the Sonoran Corridor would be a highway. It's been on the national list of highways for future expansion. And it would connect from Vail to 19. We've got to do a couple things. One, there will be a Tier 2 study. Last year, there was a group of us that helped get the funding from the state budget to do the Tier 2 environmental impact study. And that will basically narrow the route down to almost a 500-foot width. But then we got to find the funds to build it. And there's a lot of folks that are trying to think creative, you know, whether we could come up with a public-private partnership to get it built. There's some opportunities, but that there is some funding in the RTA to put towards the Sonoran Corridor that you mentioned. Matter of fact, it's right now, you know, in there, I believe it's the $20 million mark. And that won't pay for that whole corridor. But what it would pay for is the ability to match federal funds that we might be able to obtain to make that happen. So there's a lot of folks, myself being one, that believes we need that Sonoran Corridor for both business, for quality of life, and to honestly save the pavement on I-10. That's the only option you have right now.
Hey, speaking of roads, folks, summer is coming up. It's going to get pretty hot in Tucson. I encourage you to hit the road. Pay a visit to Silver City, New Mexico. I spent my high school years up there in that area, and I tell you, the Gila National Wilderness is one of the prettiest places on the planet. Now, Silver City is a small town, but they're big culture. Check out the website. They've got a great blues festival coming up Memorial Day weekend. It's just a short 3-hour drive. Plan your trip by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Ted, I want to touch we've only got a few minutes left. I want to touch briefly on something that I'm very excited about. As folks may or may not have heard, the Air Force is retiring 38 A-10s. They're shutting down the 354th Fighter Squadron, the A-10 Squadron there, the Bulldogs. They got a legacy that goes back to World War II. So basically those 38 aircraft are going into the boneyard. And I worked on the group that helped get DM off the closure list, and maintaining a healthy set of missions is essential to maintaining a healthy base. And I don't even have to mention the economic impact out there. But I tell you, I was in a meeting recently with Air Combat Command and Air Force Special Operations Command, And right now, folks may not know this, we're a fighter base, but we're also a rescue base now. The 563rd has five rescue squadrons out there. There's two reserve squadrons. They're talking about bringing one or two squadrons down from Nellis, which would be nice. But then I'm really excited about Special Operations Command. You know, there's that hurricane down there in Florida that just barely missed that base, and it would have just destroyed everything out there. So
absolutely.
I'd like to get your opinion. I'd be thrilled to death to get some gunships in here.
And I think we will. You're going to look at some more C-130s, and actually the C-130s fit in the environment in this community and address some of the concerns of some of the citizenry of having, you know, a fighter base and what's now almost getting surrounded by growth and other issues. I might be a little biased as an F-16 pilot of my whole life. I've been saying for a long time, we've got to be careful about, you know, A-10 at all costs. We have to keep it. The A-10's a phenomenal aircraft that does a mission better than anyone else can. However, the Air Force has always been looking to expand and realized they needed to retire them eventually. And my fear was we would continue to take that position until there was no good mission set to come to DM, and now the base was back in danger. Because, to your point, not only the economic development, the location, there's a reason there's so much military activity in the state of Arizona. Weather, ranges, flying. And the advent of bringing in more special operations forces, I believe Senator Kelly got four new EC-130s added to the budget, put in there to come to Davis-Monthan. We know that there's going to be the helicopter squadrons coming down from, again, maybe a more viable mission set in the in the city, and then we're hoping to see some other aircraft come down. And the bottom line is, we're probably going to end up with more airmen at the base.
I tell you, the numbers that the wing commander shared is, on balance, if we get all those missions, it will be about the same as far as economic impact and number of families out there. But like I said, long term, I think it's just important to maintain the health. And I know Red Flag is taking place right now, and I was out at the base last week and I saw a bunch of Super Tucanos out there on the ramp, which are very, very cool aircraft. I'd like to see us get more of those in our inventory to support the A-10. Just about 2 minutes left, Ted. We do have city elections coming up this fall. There's, ladies and gentlemen, you need to stay informed. You need to get out there and vote. There are two primaries, two competitive primaries in Ward 1 and also in Ward 4. Yeah, get that right. No, Ward 2, I'm sorry, Paul Cunningham's seat. There's also going to be a couple of propositions on the ballot. If they can gather enough signatures, there'll be a proposition to change our elections to ward-only elections. There'll also be something on the ballot about mayor and council pay raises. So pay attention, get engaged out there. The primary is August 1st, so you'll be seeing those early ballots in your mailbox around July 1st. But please, get engaged. If you're not registered to vote, please go out there and get it done right away.
And to your point, Ben, there's nothing more important than being a participant in our election system, whether it's for a specific issue that we're dealing with or for who we elect to represent us. So when people call in and have complaints and other concerns, well, if you're not engaging with your elected officials on a regular basis and you're not doing a smart job of getting educated when you vote, there's only one person to point the finger at. We need citizen involvement in these elections, and these are important.
I don't want to overcompensate here, but I know when I was running for city council, you almost want to say, you know, someone comes to you with a complaint and you ask them, did you vote? And if they say no, I almost wanted to say, then, you know, honestly, I don't have time for you. Because if you're not doing that basic, simple civic duty, then I, you know, come on, man.
But we think alike on that one, Ben.
Quote the president. Come on, man. Ted, thank you for spending time with the Buckmaster listeners today.
Thank you for giving me the full hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Don't forget to follow Bill's Caribbean Adventure on his Facebook page. You can find all the podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be talking a special National Police Week segment with two great guests. Again, take care, ladies and gentlemen.